Welcome to All About Jack, a C.S. Lewis podcast. I'm your host, William O'Flaherty. All About Jack is a feature of EssentialCSLewis.com. This episode is another in my occasional series of essay chats, focusing on a single shorter work by C.S. Lewis. Today, I'm pleased to present an exploration of learning in wartime. Helping me with it and actually doing most of the heavy lifting is Dr. K. Allen Snyder, author of America Discovers C.S. Lewis. But before welcoming him back to the show, let me remind you that we're providing just some highlights of the essay and not trying to give you an in-depth analysis. Hopefully, you'll want to read Learning in Wartime if you haven't. And if you have, then our wish is to spark your interest in reading it again. Well, welcome back to All About Jack Allen.
Glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Let me go ahead and give a quick overview of the format before we get into the essay. And that is first, I'm going to begin in a moment with some background information about the essay. Then that'll be followed by questions I'll pose to Allen. Next will be us sharing some of our favorite quotes from the essay. Then finally, the exploration of the essay ends by noting some related works. Well, now first then, for the background regarding the essay that we now know as Learning in Wartime, and people will understand why we say now know, because it's gone by a few other titles. Well, the first thing to note is that it was given as a sermon October 22nd, 1939, at Church of St. Mary the Virgin in Oxford, and this was his first sermon. It was known at the time then as None Other God's Culture in Wartime. Then shortly after, it came out in a booklet form, and the name was The Christian in Danger, and that was published the same year by the Student Christian Movement. It also became available in Famous English Sermons, which I'll tell you more about in a moment. And then finally, it became available in the 1949 first edition of The Weight of Glory, which was later revised. And most people today, if you get the essay collection, The Weight of Glory, it is from the 1980 revised version. And the revisions are simply some additional essays that are included. Well, now, why was Lewis asked to preach at St. Mary's, you may wonder? The Reverend Theodore Milford had read and enjoyed The Pilgrim's Progress, which was published in 1933, but let's remember the historical context. Because Lewis wasn't asked to preach solely on the fact that he wrote an interesting, though actually difficult, book. As you might recall, Lewis was a veteran of World War I, and in 1939, England had declared war on Germany not long before this sermon. Well, now, the future publisher of The Problem of Pain, Ashley Sampson, he was working on a book entitled Famous English Sermons, and he enjoyed this message so much by Lewis that he added it to that work. 17 sermons are in it overall, and that includes John Donne, Jeremy Taylor, John Wesley, Charles Spurgeon, and G. Campbell Morgan. Well, enough background. Let's go ahead and have a little chat about the essay with Allen. Well, now, it's impossible to touch on everything in an essay that's nearly 4,000 words, so let's start with what Lewis was saying to his audience. What do you take away as the main points he was making?
Well, first of all, thank you for bringing up this essay, because it's really one of my favorites. I teach a university course on Lewis, and I have my students read this essay as one of the required readings for the course. And as I look over the essay as a whole, I came up with at least six main themes or points that Lewis was trying to make. And others might be able to come up with more. I might be able to come up with more. But here's the ones that stand out to me. First of all, he's trying to deal with an issue. He's an educator, and a war is going on. So why should he continue to worry about, you know, academic pursuits? There's this war that is waging. And so he's making a case, first of all, I think his main point, first of all, is to say we are not wasting time focusing on academic pursuits just because there's a war. And he kind of leads then into the idea that, you know, life always has these disruptions. And if we wait until there aren't any disruptions in life, we'll never do anything else. We'll spend all of our time, you know, focusing on the disruptions. And even a war is just a disruption in life. And he says any profession, he moves into ideas of what we're supposed to be doing in life. And he does a nice comparison between, you know, someone who's who might be considered a very lowly profession and those who are in the academic world. And he says everything is a profession that can be done to the glory of God. And as long as it's carried out for his glory, you know, that's good. And intellectual attainments, like what he was involved in, can be one of God's paths for those who are meant for that particular path. And just because there's a war going on, it doesn't mean that you stop doing what God has called you to do. And he goes into the idea that, you know, you need people like this, because there's going to be all kinds of bad ideas floating around there in society. And you always need people who can explain the good ideas. I mean, if you're going through a war, there's a lot of bad ideas that cause that war. So you need people to continue to focus on educational attainments so they can explain things well. And so people can follow the good philosophies, as he puts it. And as we get near the end of the essay, he says, keep this in mind. We're talking about a war right now where you say, well, somebody's going to die because of the war, and the bombs are going to be falling on Britain, and they'll be over there in the army. But he says, but keep this in mind, death does come to everyone eventually. Yeah, it might come by a bullet, it might come by a bomb, but you're never going to evade it. You're always going to have death. And whether it's now or whether it's later, a gradual death, death is a certainty. And he ends the essay really by talking about, get over this idea that somehow we can kind of create a heaven on earth. It's really not going to happen. So I think overall what he's trying to emphasize here is life goes on no matter what happens. And so if we are called by God to do a certain thing, we just should go ahead and do that. At least those are the main ideas that come to me.
Well, that's good. Having looked over this essay a few times, I think that's a very good way to summarize it. As you noted, you know, some people, they may summarize slightly different or emphasize one thing or another, but yeah, that's a good way to remember the essay. Now, we've noted several times that this was written during the beginning of World War II for England. The U.S. hadn't quite stepped in yet, but given that we're not in a war in the same sense that Lewis was when he wrote this, how can this essay, apply to us today?
Well, I thought about that too. Actually, I thought about that almost a year ago when the virus hit us. And I wrote a blog at that time that I called Perspective on the Virus War and Eternity. And I used learning in wartime as my basis for the blog post that I wrote. If I can just kind of pull out a few things out of that essay, I promise I will not read the entire blog post. But I started it off, I said, along with probably all or nearly all of my professorial colleagues in the United States and in many other countries, I'm homebound now, completing my courses remotely. Is this something that is important to do in light of the current global pandemic? Shouldn't we perhaps just drop all this learning stuff and devote our whole selves to the virus war? So even though we don't have currently a war in the same sense that Lewis did in World War II, we had something that pretty much called a halt to everyday life in many ways. And so I go on to say, Lewis dealt with the same issue as World War II ramped up. He said, should the university continue teaching during the crisis? And even though the two, are not really identical, the principle to me really seems to be the same. Because Lewis noted at the time, even if we ourselves should happen not to be interrupted by death or military service, why should we? Indeed, how can we continue to take an interest in these, what he calls placid occupations, when the lives of our friends and liberties of Europe are in the balance? Is it not like, fiddling while Rome burns? That's a quote from the essay itself. And so Lewis is addressing that problem, to me, it's contemporary. Because we, even though we don't have the same exact situation, we are still on the edge of a precipice. And he says life has always lived on the edge of a precipice. Back in last March when I wrote the blog post, we didn't know for sure exactly where this virus was going to lead us. We just knew that suddenly everything was shutting down and it looked like a major emergency. And so I think there is a relevance that we can draw here, even though it's not the same as it was for Lewis as far as the outward circumstance. As I said, the principle is still the same. Something bad is happening. What are we supposed to do with what we call normal life? And the answer is, well, you still go about normal life as normally as you possibly can. At least that's the way it comes across to me.
Well, now, Alan, you mentioned before that this is one of your favorite essays. Let me have you address the question of why it is one of your favorite essays by Lewis. And then, as a historian, what stands out to you most?
I love that Lewis gives us the perspective of all of history. The fact that as you look throughout history, all the different ages that we, you know, try to study, life is never what you might call normal. I just love the way he focuses on that. There are major disruptions that are occurring all the time throughout history. We always think that maybe this is something new, that we're going through something nobody else has ever gone through. I mean, just recently, I was doing some reading in Plutarch and reading about Pericles in Athens. And guess what I came across? Pericles died from a plague that was, you know, passing through Athens at that time. And I was not aware of that. But see, we've got these things that always happen throughout history. And Lewis really kind of focuses on that. And, you know, we always focus on the disruptions, but life is always filled with them. And we shouldn't keep, you know, from doing the things we're supposed to be doing. So a good historical perspective is absolutely essential here. And one of my favorite quotes out of the essay is this, when Lewis says, "Most of all, perhaps we need intimate knowledge of the past. Not that the past has any magic about it, but because we cannot study the future and yet needs something to set against the present to remind us that the basic assumptions have been quite different in different periods, and that much which seems certain to the uneducated is merely temporary fashion." Most people today just kind of think, you know, is this the way it always is going to be? No, it's a temporary thing. "A man who has lived in many places," he says, "is not likely to be deceived by the local errors of his native village." And this is where it really comes down to the nub of it here. He says, "The scholar has lived in many times and is therefore in some degree immune from the great cataract of nonsense that pours from the press and the microphone of his own age." So for me, being a historian helps me to, I guess, kind of filter out a lot of the cataract of nonsense. And there's just as much cataract of nonsense now as it was in Lewis's time. In fact, I would probably have to say there's probably more, because we've got social media that Lewis did not have back then.
That's right. Information or discussions travel back and forth much more quickly, which is good in one sense, but also that it has its negative possibilities as well. Well, now myself, not being a historian, but being fascinated enough with history that I do try to gain more knowledge in certain realms. One of the things for myself is many years ago when I was delving a little bit more deeply into some of our church or Christian history, it was fascinating to, you know, have a more of a bird's eye view instead of like, okay, I'm a child of born in the 1960s and in the 80s, this was the climate, and my preconceived notions that I had based on what others said or what I understood them to say, and how having a better understanding of how the Christian faith came to America, some of the good ways, bad ways that it may have come, it does give a clearer perspective of things. Now, not that I have a perfect, crystal clear view, but I think trying to understand things by understanding things from the past does definitely help us to move forward for the future.
Yeah, we are always so now-centered. And I think one of the things that disturbs me a lot about our culture at the present time, and teaching at the university too, is that students seem to have, you know, almost no real knowledge of what has come before. They look at what's happening now, and the now can become kind of an all-consuming thing, and we have such a narrow view of everything. History gives us a wider perspective of this. We tend to think we're experiencing something rare. People have never had to face such things before. We live in the nuclear age, which is, you know, Lewis dealt with that one also. He wrote an excellent essay on living in an atomic age, in which he kind of made some of the same points as he does in Learning in Wartime, where he says, you know, yeah, we could die in an atomic bomb, but guess what? We're going to die anyway. So again, knowledge of history is important as we look at what's happening currently. It does give us that bird's eye view that you're talking about here. it gets us closer to what I might call 2020 hindsight. And we can look back on what has happened here and then keep it in a better perspective, I think.
And we could probably go on to discussing this point more. Actually, the next question I had prepared is probably going to touch on this, but this is making me think, though. I'll just quickly comment. If someone were to make the comment about, oh, the worst presidential election, that they will probably think of something fairly recent times. However, the election of 1800, I remember reading a book about it, and it's like, you know, that's just right at, that's just early on, and just how really interesting it was in the sense of, you know, divisions and disagreements and such. And so everyone's kind of thinks like, you know, no one's ever experienced this before, and maybe we haven't experienced exactly, but there are some similar enough things in terms of, you know, having a perspective of it by knowing things within history can be helpful.
And if you go back to that election of 1800, like you're just mentioning, John Adams, Thomas Jefferson, everybody thought if the other one wins, we're doomed. Mm-hmm. And yet now we look back on it. And I mean, the whole 1790s was a time of division. And most people don't know that because the two parties were created. And we tend to look back on it now and say, well, you know, let's compare what was divided back then to a division that might exist today. We can do a nice, you know, comparison. And realize perhaps that maybe that wasn't as bad as they thought it was at that time. And maybe people later will look back on our time and say, maybe it wasn't as bad as we thought at this particular time. We do get stuck in the now.
And not to belabor the point, but this relates here in terms of just the last few days. I was thinking in terms of, and I'm sure you've seen this, but it, you know, when one party or the other is trying to motivate their side to vote, there is a tendency to only be able to motivate by pointing out the negative possibilities if the other side wins. And so there has right. to be a better way to motivate people to participate. But getting back into the next question here, we've sort of touched around some of the aspects here, but this is what I had prepared, and that is, near the beginning of the essay, Lewis speaks of looking at, quote, the present calamity in a true perspective, close quote. What is it about current situations we find ourselves in that makes them so difficult to see from, we've already used this expression to, so far, and that is a bird's eye view? Why is it so difficult?
Well, I think that goes back to what I was talking about before. The reason we have such a hard time having a bird's eye view is because we don't know the past. So I don't want to be too repetitious here, but if I ask my students what they know, sometimes if they know something beyond a month ago, I'm very pleased. It's really not a historical culture that we have at the present time. We even have some school systems wanting to wipe out history. I know at the university I've been at for quite a while, students, when they come there, all they have to do is take one history course in 4 years. How much are you going to learn in one history course in 4 years? And that history course is just primarily just a survey. It's not going to be anything in depth. So we don't get a real perspective on things the way we need to. And we don't see the present calamity in a true perspective because we have nothing to compare it with. So we have to have good comparisons with what has happened before.
Well said. Well, now let's close out the chat part here by just asking you to assess, for the average modern reader, what would you say are the strengths and weaknesses of this essay?
Well, when you try to ask me if there's a weakness in what Lewis wrote, I have trouble. But what I would say is what we've actually kind of covered a little bit there, that people might say, I don't see the relevance. What does that have to do with us now? So one potential weakness, if you're not really understanding the principles involved, one potential weakness is saying we don't have a major war like that, therefore this essay has nothing to say to me. And I would just challenge people to look beyond that, because the strengths in this essay are just, so many. The emphasis on the continuity in life, because life is going to go on regardless, no matter what is happening around us. So what's important is how we respond to what's happening. And all vocations are from God. And if he's called you to do something, you go ahead and you do that. you don't let current events dictate to you whether you follow through on what God has called you to do and be. And Lewis, of course, he was called to be an academic, and he felt like, I don't lose that calling just because a war is going on. In fact, he says it's even perhaps more important, because people do have to have the right ideas. And so the clear perspective he gives us in this essay on the certainty of death, because we tend to think of death more when there is some major catastrophe like the war, or like the current virus that we're dealing with over 400,000 people in America having died from it in less than a year. But yet he keeps reminding us, we're going to die anyway, eventually. So the real key question here is, are you ready for that? When death comes, where are you? What are you thinking? What is your life all about? So Lewis, as always, has things to tell us currently, even though he didn't live in our day.
Well, now, hopefully what we've just shared has been enough to spark people an interest to go ahead and read this if they haven't, or if they have, to reread it. But let's now go ahead and look at some of the favorite quotes that you selected, and then I'll share mine as well. You already shared one, so go ahead and share the others. You can give a brief comment or not.
Well, you got to understand the danger of asking an academic to share a quote, right, first of all, because we like to provide the context. The first one that stood out to me in the essay was Lewis saying, "The war creates no absolutely new situation. It simply aggravates the permanent human situation so that we can no longer ignore it. Human life has always been lived on the edge of a precipice. Human culture has always had to exist under the shadow of something infinitely more important than itself. If men had postponed the search for knowledge and beauty until they were secure, the search would never have begun. We are mistaken when we compare war with normal life. Life has never been normal." If we're waiting for security, Lewis says, you might as well just toss that out. Security will probably never happen. And life has never been normal. So that's the first quote that stuck out to me. Then I liked what he said, "A man may have to die for our country, but no man must in any exclusive sense live for his country. He who surrenders himself without reservation to the temporal claims of a nation or a party or a class is rendering to Caesar that which of all things most emphatically belongs to God, which is himself." And I thought that had some relevance to our current situation here in America right now. Do we belong to a party more than anything else? Do we belong to a nation? And the answer is no, we belong to God. We got to keep our priorities straight. And I've kind of hinted about this one also. He said it in the middle of the essay, says, "To be ignorant and simple now, not to be able to meet the enemies on their own ground, would be to throw down our weapons, betray our uneducated brethren, who have under God no defense but us against the intellectual attacks of the heathen. Good philosophy must exist, if for no other reason, because bad philosophy needs to be answered." And I think I've commented on that concept a couple times here already. And the final one I have is at the end of the essay. He says, "If we had foolish, unchristian hopes about human culture, they are now shattered. If we thought we were building up a heaven on earth, if we looked for something that would turn the present world from a place of pilgrimage into a permanent city satisfying the soul of man, we are disillusioned, and not a moment too soon." So I really like that one, reminding us we are on a pilgrimage. Nothing will satisfy in this present world. There's just, to me, there's so much that Lewis packs into this essay.
Oh, definitely. I'm sure you experience this every time you read or reread a Lewis essay. There's the obvious things that you noticed before, or maybe they're obvious to you before. And then there's some things like, almost like, ooh, that's standing out more. And when I was preparing for this, going over it about six or seven times, it's like there were, oh, wow, okay. I was, appreciating some other aspects that I missed, certain other sentences and such. But yeah, it's a very, very good essay. Now, I had the benefit of knowing what your favorite quotes were before I selected mine, but I didn't read through them until after I picked out mine. And ironically, being known for someone that not only cautions people about sharing quotes that are not by Lewis, they're falsely attributed to him, I also know the importance of context. I do tend to gravitate more toward shorter quotes, so I especially appreciate what you were just sharing. One of the shorter quotes that I had was contained in part of your longer one. I'll just read my shorter portion, and that is, human culture has always had to exist under the shadow of something infinitely more important than itself. Then something that is a short quote that was around part of one of your other quotes, which does need context to it, and that is, quote, the rescue of drowning men is then a duty worth dying for, but not worth living for. And so I thought, as a summary statement, in order to remember some of the principles, that especially stood out. Another one, all merely natural activities will be accepted if they are offered to God, even the humblest, and all of them, even the noblest, will be sinful if they are not. Related to that, a quote from this essay is, the work of a Beethoven and the work of a charwoman become spiritual on precisely the same condition, that of being offered to God, of being done humbly as to the Lord. Then you shared the larger context for this one. Good philosophy must exist if for no other reason, because bad philosophy needs to be answered. And then now here's two other final quotes. The only people who achieve much are those who want knowledge so badly that they seek it while the conditions are still unfavorable. Favorable conditions never come. And then another one is, what does war do to death? It certainly does not make it more frequent. 100% of us die, and the percent cannot be increased. All right, then, let's go ahead and move on to the related works. Here, Alan is going to share some works for you to consider if you especially enjoy this essay that touches on some similar themes. Alan, what did you come up with?
Well, first of all, some of Lewis's other essays, I think, touch upon what he covers here in Learning in Wartime. He wrote Why I Am Not a Pacifist. Now, that's obviously something that would relate to the wartime, you know, endeavor. It's Lewis's apologetic for the just war and why he would participate. He also wrote Meditation on the Third Commandment, which is the proper Christian response to the nation and politics. And now you do not live for the nation or for your political party or whatever. Another essay is Christianity and Culture. And it's really how Lewis came to his own piece about his profession as an educator. Well worth reading. Another essay is called Historicism, which makes a clear distinction between the role of a historian versus somebody who's trying to be a historicist. And if you want to know what that means, you'll need to read the essay. I also would recommend going to his book, An Experiment in Criticism, because within that book is a comparison of the literary and the unliterary and what they read that is different. And I would just, again, go to The Abolition of Man and That Hideous Strength as well. The Abolition of Man gives us warnings regarding educational conditioners. And Hideous Strength is the thesis from The Abolition of Man in novel form. So both dealing with education, how education can go wrong. And of course, Lewis's profession is education.
Oh, yes, very good. Yeah, in fact, one of the essays, Meditation on the Third Commandment, years ago I did a essay chat, and personally I haven't listened to it in a while, so bringing that up, that encourages me to go back and listen, and I hope our listeners will consider that as well. I'll have a link in the show notes to that. Well, now, before I let you go, Alan, let me give you some time to give some background about yourself and a quick summary of your book, America Discovers C.S. Lewis. But let me first mention that in the show notes, listeners will find a link to the interview I did with you about you and your book a few years ago.
Well, I am an American historian. American history is where I have focused on, but at one point I was actually given a sabbatical from my university, and I always, since I was such a fan of Lewis, I wondered what I could do to tie Lewis together with American history, because you know he never was over here or anything like that. But I found a niche. Nobody had ever written a book about Lewis's connections to America, his interactions with Americans. Some people had hinted at it, and they talked about it here and there, but it had never been all pulled together in one place. And so with research at the Wade Center and looking through Lewis's letters, an invaluable resource that Walter Hooper gave us, I was able to use that sabbatical to good purpose and write America Discovers C.S. Lewis and come up with some rationale for why Americans really liked Lewis, perhaps even more than what his native country did. So that's a little bit of background on me and why I think the book is well worthwhile. It even includes a survey that I conducted with the cooperation of the Wade Center, asking Americans various questions about their connections with Lewis. So for some strange reason, I kind of recommend this book if you'd like to get it.
And I enjoyed reading it very much and doing the interview that we did several years ago. Actually, I know I'm trying to remember when we actually recorded it, but I know from having just reposted it at the time we're recording this, I released that recording about 3 years ago this month, which is January of 2021. Actually, I'm doing my math wrong. That would be 4 years ago because that was in 2017. But yeah, so your book must have come out in 2016, I'm guessing.
End of 2016, yes.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, now then it goes without saying that I do definitely recommend that people consider buying your book, and they can again get more information about it if they help them decide further by listening to that interview we did several years ago. And there'll be that link in the show notes. Well, then, all that's left for this part, then, is to say thanks, Alan, for being on All About Jack.
Thank you for having me. I always enjoy it.
Thanks also to you, our listener, for your interest in this episode of All About Jack, a feature of EssentialCSLewis.com. Again, I'm William O'Flaherty, your host and the creator of this podcast. Be sure to visit Essential C.S. Lewis for a variety of content, including a series about quotations credited to Lewis that he might not have written. I also have a YouTube channel entitled 90 Seconds to Knowing C.S. Lewis. There's a link in the show notes to it. Today, you heard my conversation with Dr. K. Allen Snyder on the Lewis essay, Learning in Wartime. You'll find links in the show notes on how to read that essay, along with other essays and books mentioned during the show, as well as a link to Allen's website and a direct link to the blog post by him that he mentioned. Speaking of those notes, you can find them at EssentialCSLewis.com and look for this show. But it might be just as easy to find them where the podcast is hosted, which is allaboutjack.podbean.com. Podbean is spelled P-O-D-B-E-A-N. You can also listen to All About Jack via iTunes, see the show notes for a direct link to it there, and consider rating my show on iTunes to help others find it. And of course, please consider sharing this show so others can hear it. Before closing out, in case you didn't know, I've written two books related to C.S. Lewis. Buying them is a great way to indirectly support this podcast, so it can continue to be made freely available. In 2018, The Misquotable C.S. Lewis was published. It explores 75 quotations credited to Lewis. Most are not by him, some are paraphrases, and a few are ones that could be misunderstood without more context. Then in 2016, my first book was released. It's an enhanced study guide to the Screwtape Letters, humorously called C.S. Lewis Goes to Hell. Learn more about it and get a free PDF sample by visiting ScrewtapeCompanion.com. Finally, thank you again for listening to All About Jack, a podcast feature of EssentialCSLewis.com. I'm William O'Flaherty.